Is it just us?
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Kate, what are you doing?
Nothing. My daughter was bouncing around here saying, can I talk?
Yes. Yes.
She disappeared now. It was boring that I was fumbling.
How are
the
you?
Phone. I'm okay.
Good.
Good.
Things even keel or any movement or just okay?
I'm okay. Okay.
Right. Hear that.
I'm all banged up and bruised. My butt and my leg.
Dude, welcome to Ironman training.
I'm a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
I know, right? Okay. So.
Do you have another one of these calls coming up for the same thing?
Do what?
Did you have another one of these calls, like a second session for this part of the book?
Well, I thought we would do, like, you know, the first part of it and then do the next part of it later. I don't know. Hey, this time it might be just a bad time. What do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah?
It's usually
a good time
for
you?
Yeah, I mean, it is, but it's usually hard for me to break away. My son happened to pass out because he hasn't taken a nap in 3 days.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think? Do what?
I love this book.
I know, right?
I feel like you could have written this book.
I know, right? I'm like, oh, yeah. This book is talking about everything that I think and say. And I know, right? Yeah. What if you and I have a discussion, a sort of kind of put together discussion. I will lead it. We'll just sort of have a conversation about the first introduction and the first chapter. What do you think?
Sure. I'm flipping through it now to refresh because I kind of went much further than that.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, so we are reviewing, talking about The Brave Athlete, Calm the F Down and Rise to the Occasion. And, you know, really, I was inspired to read this because, well, frankly, my favorite word right now is F-U-F, F-U-C-K. not in the vulgar sense, but in the sense that life is pretty cray-cray right now. And I need a little bit more of calm down and rise to the occasion. So I thought it would be a good read and probably very, very super stinking duper timely. What do you think, Kate? Why were you inspired to read it?
I was inspired to read it because I was starting to freak out about Eagleman and whether or not I was going to get there and do what I had to do or finish in the time needed. And it was a very timely read. I was reading it in the car on the way there.
It's awesome. Awesome, awesome. I think somebody else in the group, April, she, I'll divulge, she has some swim anxiety. Not severe, but it's definitely getting in her face. And she's been reading it too. And, you know, she just did a triathlon in open water, which was part of her anxiety, and she was like, hey, that swim went really well. And I do think that sometimes we just need the right language or the right words or just the right mindset, and things can go from kind of being really a big struggle to being copacetic, just all in, you know, the power that we put into the words and our beliefs. And this book kind of gives us some information on, you know, what's going on, how we can do it, and stuff like that. So, anyway, cool.
Literally,
so,
page 9 talks about the inside of the head of a triathlete during an open water swim start. I'm not a super scientific person, so all the talk about the pieces of the brain didn't really mean a lot to me, but it's interesting to understand how many things are competing in your mind when you're trying to do what you do.
Dude, I am so glad that you brought that up. And I want to write a blog post on it. But, you know, for years I have always joked around that I have like 5 people in my head. And it's my round table, you know, where I'm thinking King Arthur, you know, I like castles and swords and Xena, right? And I've always joked around that, you know, the five voices in my head need to shut the hell up so I can get something done, right? And so in reading this, like you were saying, that the actual parts of the brain, and there's six of them. So I always wondered if five was right, but there's six of them, and the specific parts of the brain actually send you different messages in like different languages because they're coming from a different part of the brain. And now I kind of really kind of understand, you know, you've got that, the limbic system that is trying to save you from the shark, theoretical shark in the water. And, you know, it tells you what the F are you doing in this water, right? And then the logical part of your brain, the frontal lobe that's evolved and ties our shoes for us, says, you're stupid. Stop. There's no sharks in here. Right?
Yep.
I love that. I love that description of the words that they use. And so, you know, because I would always tell people, they would look at me funny about my round table, my five voices, and I would look at them and I'd be like, you know, it's a bunch of crap if you're not actually recognizing that you have multiple voices in your head. No, I don't have a personality disorder. No, I don't need to be on meds. Right? You do have different versions of stuff going on in your head, and stop looking at me like that. And so I love that part of, oh, okay, my round table and I feel vindicated. Which one do you, you know, in that part, was there one that you really kind of identified with? Was it the emotional center, the one that, you know, is just kind of like, don't touch me or I'm going to kill you kind of voices?
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
And I definitely, I think I had more of that in my first two races than I did this time around. So something's working.
Yeah. I think that, you know, it can be night and day just with a thought, just a moment, if you just recognize, oh, that's normal to think like that. There's nothing wrong with the limbic system. There's nothing wrong with that kind of flavor of your voice. It's there to protect you. It is designed to do that. We just need to not become so attached to it. And then we have a little bit of control to say, okay, yes, that one is freaking out because we don't have gills. But I do know how to swim, so we're going to be okay. And I do have a wetsuit, and there's a kayaker, and. Cool.
Yep.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that part. And then there are kind of pictures and descriptions of kind of what's going on and stuff like that.
I was flipping through here because while it introduces that, there's a really good section that's like two pages long talking more, I thought more about the swim start specifically. And it was hilarious. It literally spells out all of those those emotions and the kicking and, oh, hey, brain, in 6 minutes, this is going to calm down and it's going to be okay.
Right. Yeah, I know. And it should give us power in swim or in life or in a business meeting. And, you know, it is one of those reasons why I tell folks, hey, if you're kind of nervous about some of this stuff, do a run, a little run before you start this, so then you can get through the catecholamines that happen from running and picking up stuff and get your cardiovascular system, you know, at least primed up a little bit, so you have a better chance of, you know, more room to, you know, relax and be like, oh, okay, this is normal, this is going to pass, I'm good, I got this. Cool. Yep. I love this book, though. The pictures are just, like, freaking gloriously awesome, and I've highlighted so much stuff, right?
Yep.
Okay. What did you think? Did anything stick with you? So they were describing kind of how we roll as a human being. You know, we're pretty smart and stuff like that. We can get a lot of stuff done. Did it make sense to you, their conversation about the chimp versus the professor and then the add-on, you know, the software at the end? Did that all make sense to you?
I think so. I think so. Just that one's rational and one's acting out and things kind of settle somewhere in between.
Yeah.
I think.
I kind of appreciated it. I think maybe in that light, definitely, you know, where the chimp is this, they like to use metaphors, I guess. It's kind of fun that they use the chimp as a, and it's from, you know, super smarty books. The chimp is from, is associated with our very instinctive behaviors, you know, the very base of breathing and, you know, running when some loud creatures behind you, I guess they go into eating and hiding and running and sexual stuff, you know, all those kind of primal things. And, you know, they did kind of have a flavor that that chimp is kind of bad, like misbehaving. But
and bully.
Do what?
Talked about him. Talked about your chimp as a bully.
Yeah, and you know, I'm reading this, and I'm not trying to challenge them or anything like that, but, you know, you could get a flavor that maybe this chimp is bad and that we need to control the chimp, and they say don't try to control the chimp because, you know, it's just your instinctive stuff, but, you know, it got us where we are, and I think it's just, it comes with good and bad, right? But it's just kind of like a very strong, innate way that we are for our own survival. And, you know, they were talking about it'll do this. It, you know, it identifies with paranoia and fear and stuff like that. Well, it also identifies with love and all that good stuff too. So that chimp isn't just about fear and driving you crazy and stuff like that. It's also, you know, what would drive you to smile at your baby when your baby smiles at you, or sniffing their hair, right, and stuff
yep.
like that. So I like that, you know, they talk about that it's there for a reason, a very valid and very important reason. I think we have just in our society have gotten so connected to it, so it attached to it, and we do let it bully us around. I mean, it's supposed to be stronger than our thinking, because if, you know, if it wasn't, we might not have survived certain things. But I like how it does talk about controls our fight or flight, all those things that need to happen like in a nanosecond, right?
Yep.
You know, and I like this. I highlighted this part where it said, is paranoid as a result of deep-seated need for safety, is hyper-vigilant about protecting you. I can really relate to some of that just in kind of like sometimes how I roll in relationships or stuff like that. Certainly, you know, in water, you know, your need for safety, that needs to be hyper diligent, and, you know, or else, you know, maybe you don't, you know, your instincts don't take over sometimes, right?
Yep.
I thought that was kind of cool. And then, did you like the professor? Who was the professor?
Who was the professor?
Yeah, who's the professor?
Honestly, I read this part of the book so long ago, I'm flipping through the pages to refresh my memory and my notes. So the professor is the logical one, right? Facts and figures,
right,
and weighing
yeah.
everything against the chimp, who's the emotional one.
Yeah, so no emotion, just facts and whatnot. It says, important to remember about your professional brain, it deals only with facts, truth, and logic. And it says, you know, the chimp releases powerful neurotransmitters during a decision-making process, and this is how the professor brain gets pushed aside or tricked. I think, and this is just my personal opinion, like addiction, sugar, crack, sexting, sex texting, porn, alcohol, whatever, right? This is what it's talking about. So like that chimp wants to feel good. It doesn't know that you're giving it crack. It just knows that it feels good, right?
Yep.
And so that behavior, if it feels good, and then it sends neurotransmitters to solidify whatever you did, that habit you did that momentarily made it feel good, either eating that donut or doing the crack, cracks, I'm sorry, it's a bad example, but.
But your professor goes along with it because chocolate feels good. Chocolate is good. And yeah, I agree with that. Okay. No, I'm not throwing up any flags. It's not able to rationalize that. No, chocolate's not good for your diet because, well, it feels good. So it's okay. Right.
Yeah. And I think, you know, our culture really kind of messes with us because, you know, we think that chocolate instinctively, I think that we, or not instinctively, but logically, we kind of brainwashed ourselves that it's good for us. We give it away at Halloween all the time. We give it to all our kids on this most blessed holiday, Easter. You know, what's Easter without chocolate? And it's now like an important factor in our holidays and our celebrations. And I think that like really plays into all of this, into the, you know, brainwashing the logical mind and then the chimp, oh, I like the chocolate. And so mo chocolate, right? And then it becomes hard to not eat the chocolate. But anyway, yeah. So I highlighted in here that studies in cognitive science and behavioral economics have shown that your professor brain is pushed, bullied, and tricked most of the time, which is kind of interesting. It shows how strong the chimp mind is and that, you know, we have a lot to work on or recognize when we're going and doing some of the stuff that's really pushing ourselves outside the box, right?
Yep.
Because I know, you know, me, I've dealt with severe swim anxiety. And it was very hard to get through because it was, you know, very real. And let's face it, I don't have gills. I'm not a fish. So it was kind of natural to have a good amount of fear for swimming like that because it's natural. I'm not a fish. And then
I
my logical
experienced that. And I've shared that with you that, I'm okay. But what I had to think about getting in a body of water without a wetsuit and getting kicked and hit and feeling unsafe, then I started to get really crazy and stressed out.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, this reading was really good leading up to that.
Right. So, pretty cool, the chimp and the professor, and then they go one step further, which I really liked. I hadn't thought about it like this, was that on top of that, or in the middle of that, is a third part of the brain or whatever, and it's called, they call it the operating system, but it runs in the background. And I guess essentially it's fast, and we have so much stimulus coming at us that we have to develop these shortcuts and little key, you know, portions of code or whatever that become autopilot and default based on some stuff from the chimp and some stuff from the professor. And then, you know, we kind of have these programs that we run through automatically and, you know, based on our stories that we store in our brain or our beliefs and stuff like that. So I found that like super interesting how they described those three kind of levels of understanding our behavior and thought processes. What do you think?
Yes, and I think if I'm not mistaken, this leads into it then to say like what we're focused on in the rest of the book is how to undo some of those bugs that we've developed,
right?
Based on past experience,
right? I know, right? So you maybe have, you know, I think like post-traumatic stress fits into this, and you know, don't shoot me if I'm wrong, but you know, an incident happens, you kind of have post-traumatic stress, a real strong tie to, they say in here that one of the ways to deal with the chimp when it's gone awry is to not, you know, really try to scold the chimp, put it in timeout, because that never works, but to figure out what it's missing, what need that it has, a need for safety or a need for food or whatever, so provide it the need. And it gives you the space to for it to calm down a little bit, and then you can kind of recognize, oh, okay. Like me, I almost drowned when I was little. So I probably have probably post-traumatic stress from all this drowning. And then I try to force myself and force myself and force myself to get over it. And I spent a good year or two trying to fix the chimp. And the chimp just continued to get a little more irate and mad because it was saying that, you know, I was basically telling it that it was all wrong. And, you know, it really wasn't. It had a legitimate reason to be afraid of the water because I almost drowned. And it's like, well, what the heck, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, sitting on top of that in the computer is this kind of program. Water's unsafe because you almost drowned. And so every time you go into the water, you try to swim, you get this da-da-da-da-da routine. And it wasn't until I did some other things. I had yoga and breathing practices, really, to find that space in between, you know, like there's a space in between kind of the computer and the professor and the chimp in order to kind of like decide, okay, which way I'm going to go. I'm going to go more logical with the professor this time because I'm not going to drown.
I'm too new to this to figure out why I was so calm on race morning. I have no idea why I was so calm, but I hope it repeats. And I hope I can do it. The stakes are bigger.
You know, on that, and what I have found, so our society kind of gives us this idea that we have to continue to work hard, work hard, work hard, and sometimes things just don't naturally go away and are easy. But what I found with my specific swim anxiety and all this stuff that I just shared, I did a couple of breathing practices and it was gone. You know, all of like less than an hour of effort did more to fix my swim anxiety than a year of continuing to get into open water and force myself to figure out how to get it done. An hour versus a year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just in how, and it's exactly what they're talking about. Stop trying to fix the chimp, love on it, give it what it needs, and then recognize that you can change that computer program in there and do whatever you want. Like, I used to tell myself all the time, I'm a badass. That's what I said when I was swimming. Super awesome, cool. So
I know we're not, I think we're just talking about this first chapter, but I would add, you know, based on what you just said, I think it was powerful for me to sit back and think about myself as an athlete or not, you know, however those thoughts go, and to think about your alter ego, if you will. And it's, to me, that's when I joke and say, you know, you could have written this book. It's, I'm going to put on my hat that says I can get this done today and
right.
My try kit, and I'm going to write something on my arm, and I'm going to look the part, and I'm going to walk the walk, and I'm going to pretend like I'm supposed to be here.
Right.
And I, like, all of that kind of played into my success on race day and putting some of this stuff from the book to use.
Right. You know, and I think that it's really kind of maybe interesting to think about, you know, you say, and I, you know, I've said this a lot, put that, I got this hat on, right?
Yep.
And I think there is some huge power in the fact that instead of just putting the hat on, right, and kind of pretending like you got it, I think there's some space sometimes that is actually true that you don't need to put the hat on. You're metaphorically putting the hat on, but you do have it. You do have it. You're just like kind of putting this hat on thing to turn it on. It's like a little light switch, right? And so that's what I would say to your, you know, I hope this doesn't go away. I don't think it's going to go away because it's who you are now. It's there. You did it once. It's there.
I sure
it's
hope
you.
So. I really signing up for an Ironman race as a newbie thinking, oh my gosh, if I make it through all this training, how am I ever going to show up on race day and not have a complete, you know, meltdown because it's such a big day. You've done all this work. You get there. How do you do it? Well, I just did it for a half Ironman. So what's the difference, right?
Maybe. Yeah. Okay.
Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay. So let's
go ahead. Sorry.
No, you're fine. So let's wrap up this little section of talking about the brain. I think it's super fascinating. It gives us a lot of power to understand that we're not just cray-cray. We do have voices in our head. They're all coming from something very legitimate, and they're supposed to be there. They all have their own function. We need to stop judging them, you know, and instead, look, if you're having anxiety, take a step back. I did this the other day. I had a run-in. I had a little life episode, and I had enough. I had a whole bunch of space, and I was able to take a step back and see a connection point so clearly of something that was going on in my computer that I didn't want. It was like a real huge blessing, but, you know, if I hadn't recognized, okay, this chimp is going on, and I got this professor thing going on, I got this computer in the middle, if I hadn't have thought of it like that, I would have just connected with the cray-cray feeling and probably sent a crappy email, and it would have gotten worse. But I totally appreciate that, because it's, you know, it's how to be a freaking awesome athlete, but it's also kind of how to roll through life a little bit calmer as well, which I think that a lot of us could benefit from. So, in summary, your professor deals with facts, truth, logic, how you play your piano and drive and put your clothes on, and your chimp deals with feelings and impressions and emotions and is based on instinct and drive. It's your flight or flight. It's your love. It's your fear. And your computer brain is like a machine that takes orders and kind of collaborates between the chimp and the professor to run these programs to make things a little more efficient and whatnot. And a couple of things that I highlighted that I thought were really freaking awesome. I love this book because it's like, okay, all this is cool and awesome, but this is how you really kind of apply it. And it says, a simple way to figure out which brain is in charge at the moment. And it says, Dr. Steve Peters recommends you just ask yourself this question. Do I want to feel or think like this? You know, if you're in the middle of a phone call and someone's yelling at you and you're feeling like a certain way, do you actually want to feel like that? And if the answer is no, then your chimp is in charge and it's more emotion-based. And that's not necessarily bad. You're just recognizing it so you can decide how you're going to respond or react. And then if your answer is yes, then the professor is in charge. And that makes it pretty simple, I thought. Did you connect with that or have any thoughts on that?
I definitely connected with that. And again, not to skip ahead, but just thinking about, you know, if you were floating above yourself on your worst race day and looking down and remembering what was driving you on that bad day, I think you can really clearly see when you're not, when you're experiencing the stuff you don't want to experience and how to not let that control you.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's all about kind of perspective, really. You know, not being so attached to a thought, a feeling, an emotion, an instinct of, you know, fight or flight or whatnot. Just not being so attached to it and really kind of understand, hey, this is kind of normal, or it is a product of something else, but it really doesn't define me and I can choose to do different, to rise to the occasion, like it says, as you did at Eagle Man.
Yep.
Booyah. Right? Okay, awesome. All right.
Good.
Chapter one of The Brave Athlete, Calm the F Down and Rise to the Creation. Hey, this is a really good book written by Simon Marshall and Leslie Patterson. So thanks, Kate, for chattering with me, and we'll do it again.
Sure thing. Have a good one.
Hey, you too. Bye-bye.